Welcome to Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mike Capone to the broadcast. Mike is the Chief Executive Officer of Qlik, a leading provider of analytics software and visualization analytics. As CEO, Mike is responsible for leading Qlik's mission to become the leader in the analytics economy. Prior to Qlik, Mike spent time as Chief Operating Officer of Metadata Solutions and 26 years with Automatic Data Processing, or ADP, in a variety of senior leadership positions, including Chief Information Officer, Head of Product Development, and General Manager of Global HR Payroll. Mike has a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from Dickinson College and an MBA in Finance from Pace University. I recently sat down with Mike in his office in New York City, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, People, as he stressed the importance of data literacy within organizations. Principle 2, infrastructure, as Mike discussed how Qlik provides customers an integrated solution that takes them from raw data analytics to artificial intelligence. And Principle 5, external partnerships, as Mike discussed how he collaborates with end users, department heads, functional areas, and IT, and how Mike's technology background has allowed him a better understanding of Qlik's customers' needs. We also discussed Mike's journey to the CEO role, his advice to CIOs looking to make similar career advances to other C-level positions, Qlik's focus on streamlining the analytics process to deliver one platform, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World Class IT is brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey discusses how to drive additional value from working with startups, such as leveraging the domain expertise and passion of the high-quality talent they attract in unconventional ways.
Number 4 is about startups. Startups are a great source for innovation. Very little innovation is coming from the big vendors today, while startups, on the other end, are all about innovation. Startups have another great advantage, which is that they attract high-quality talent. The founders and the team around the founders are typically domain experts with a lot of passion for what they're doing. They're also very eager to succeed, very eager to show value, and are not going to give up easily. On the other end, there are risks working with startups. They're less mature, less organized, might change direction, might have financial challenges down the road. My recommendation is try and drive additional value from startups in their field of expertise. So for example, if you're working with cybersecurity startups, the founders and the core team are most likely domain experts. They can provide opinion on your security architecture, on some of the directions you're taking. They can help identify complex security issues in your environment, help investigate incidents, etc. Most of them would be very happy to do this, as long as it's close enough to their technology. It's an opportunity for them to demonstrate expertise, service, and commitment. And in times when good talents are very hard to get, thinking out of the box and using the talents that are knocking on your door could be very rewarding. This way, it's almost guaranteed that every interaction with a startup returns value, even if you ended up not buying their solution.
Tune in next week when Mickey will discuss factors for choosing vendors. IT. I should say welcome back to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, always good to be with you, Mike. First and foremost, congratulations on just a little more than 6 months ago getting your first CEO role as the Chief Executive Officer of Qlik. Congrats on that great news.
Thank you very much. Something you and I have talked about for a long time, so I appreciate the congratulations.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we begin with that role and begin with your company. In your own words, I'd love to hear kind of your an overview of what the business does and maybe a little bit about where it's heading.
Sure. So Qlik is a leading provider of analytics software, visualization analytics, and we pride ourselves on being able to solve simple problems for users, but also being able to solve very complex enterprise analytics problems as well. So our strength is being able to work well with end users, user-friendly, easy to get to, et cetera, but then also build application analytics that actually benefit the entire enterprise, you know, solving complex problems. And our vision, quite honestly, is to embed analytics in every operational and every strategic decision-making process inside of a company. We truly believe that data is the currency of the future, and making your employees more data literate is going to be the thing that's going to help you compete in the future.
Yeah, and given that, that makes a lot of sense. I can foresee one challenge in the way you've described that, in that it's a solution that could potentially apply to anywhere. Mm-hmm. So where do you then, how do you think about your entry points into companies if in fact almost any part of the organization could use this?
Well, we like to do both. So, you know, we believe that a successful engagement with a customer has to involve not just end users, not just department heads, not just functional areas, but IT as well. And we pride ourselves on being very IT friendly. We have incredible governance and security structure inside of our product because it's always a huge problem in these types of applications is they can proliferate and they're hard to govern and to manage, and that creates a burden on IT. And very often they find out about these things a little too late, right? And then they have to go back. So we try to do both, and we've been very successful at doing both. Most of our customers, CIOs, are great advocates of ours, which obviously being a former CIO, I pride myself on because you know, I used to be on the other side of that table. And what we do is we try to look at, you know, the company's strategy and where they're going, and then try to figure out how analytics can help them drive competitive success. Yes, we can solve the end user, you know, kind of desktop analytics problems, and we'll do that all day long. But really unlocking value is going to be in solving true strategic problems for our customers.
Obviously, this is a very hot space. Mm-hmm. And as a result of being a hot space, there's a lot of competition as well. That's right. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about how you see differentiating yourself and maybe a little bit about where you see the next year or so, whatever your strategic horizon is.
Right, right. So in addition to kind of describing the fact that, you know, we're a true platform, right? So we do differentiate ourselves. A lot of people who we are mentioned as competitors of Qlik are really focused on end user analytics, which is great. There's a need for that, but we really think we solve a much larger problem for the enterprise. And we're expanding our reach. So we're not just an analytics and visualization tool anymore. We actually are a full data platform. So when you think about the real analytics problem is not just visualization. That's a component of it, but it's actually getting data ready for analytics. So raw data transformation, data preparation, data cataloging, and then analytics, and then in the end, starting to layer in machine learning and AI on top of the analytics to actually guide end users to a successful outcome. So that's what we're building. And as recently as last week, we actually did an acquisition, a company called Podium Data up in Boston, a fantastic company that's focused on what I talked about, raw data into data prep and data cataloging, the ability to actually extract what much more value out of today what is the most underutilized asset in the world, which is data lakes.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And can you talk a bit about sort of like what success looks like? I mean, so if there's a CIO or a CMO mm-hmm. who's listening to this who would be interested in possibly exploring this, can you talk a bit about the use case or the value that they would derive from using Qlik?
Well, I think the value is you can have one platform to solve your analytics needs, right? So we all know as CIOs, you know, my worst nightmare was cobbling together a bunch of different solutions. I need Hadoop for a data lake, and I need an ETL tool, you know, I need a data prep tool, and I need an analytics and visualization tool. And then there's a lot of solutions out there that that deal in machine learning and AI. They're all great. There's some really fantastic companies out there. It's just really hard to have an estate that's got all those things and having to tie them all together. So our goal actually is to streamline that process to give you an integrated solution that will actually take you all the way through raw data analytics and AI as well. And then the second piece is through the way we constructed our product, which is completely open API driven, as well as the ability to abstract our analytics engine out, you can actually use our platform anywhere in your business. You can embed our cognitive engine into your mobile apps. You can embed it into your business processes. So you can start to, again, get to analytics at the point of decision making, right? It's not a thing after the fact. It's actually right as you're trying to make a critical operational decision, a strategic decision, have analytics at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. That's what we're gunning for.
Are there certain verticals that you play in more than others?
Well, what I love, you know, I came out of healthcare, which was awesome, but that was a vertical for sure. And it was great. You know, we were helping cure disease, and so it was super rewarding. Click is different than it's completely horizontal. There's no executive anywhere in any industry that is turning down a conversation about analytics right now. Super critical. Everybody wants to make sure they're getting strategic value out of their information. That said, we do still have a very strong vertical in healthcare and drug development, which was appealing to me. You and I have talked before about my affinity for life sciences, and the good news is, you know, great customers like AbbVie, J&J have been my customers throughout my past job as well. We're also super strong in financial services. As you and I sit here in Midtown in New York City, I can throw a rock and hit like 8 of the 10 top financial services firms are our customers. Retail, another great vertical. But that said, every industry, we've got representative customers.
That's really great. You talked a bit about the fact that you are a past CIO at mm-hmm. Automatic Data Processing, ADP. And I wonder how that has colored even the thought process as you were thinking about joining Click, as you were investigating the opportunity. And of course, now as CEO, now that, as you mentioned, you're on the opposite side of
right.
some of your old peers as chief information officers, how that's colored your experience?
It's been great. I mean, first of all, I'm technologically savvy, right? So one of the things that I get when we're sitting here in one of our sales offices, one of the things I get from the salespeople is how much they appreciate the fact that I deeply understand the product and I understand the persona that we're selling to. I understand the people on the other side of the table. That's really important. I have empathy for my customers, right? I understand the complexity of dealing with a landscape that's sort of this heterogeneous vendor environment. They're dealing with really difficult issues like data privacy, GDPR, security. You can imagine when I was at ADP and I was managing the operations there, how much time and energy I had to spend on those types of issues. So I can speak a very common language with our customers, and I can also work with ourselves in marketing and product people to make sure that we're factoring all those things in. It's been incredibly helpful for me in getting to the CEO role and being successful in the last two tech companies I've been in.
As you alluded to at the outset, it's been a goal of yours for some time. And it's a goal I know of a lot of people who mm-hmm. are technology executives who mm-hmm. eventually rise to climb the ladder towards mm-hmm. bigger roles and eventually maybe if they can to chief executive officer. Mm-hmm. And now, having gone from CIO, I should also mention that you ran product, you've been the GM of portions of ADP as right. well, so you had some P&L experience and so on, even as you were an IT leader. You went on to become COO of Metadata Solutions, as you alluded to, mm-hmm. now up the chain to CEO of Click. I wonder if you, as you work your way back down the ladder or reflect upon mm-hmm. the journey up it, what sort of advice you would offer to those who would wish to follow in your footsteps?
Right. Well, the first is don't believe people who tell you can't do it. You and I... And I tell this story, I know you're laughing, because you were there with me when we had this conversation, but panel discussion in New York City, one of those IT conferences, four very respected executive recruiters on stage in a panel. I raised my hand and I said, what do you see as the opportunities for CIOs to get to other C-level jobs, including CEO? And they unanimously said, you can't do it. It doesn't happen. So I told you so, like we did. So first of all, like don't believe it. I would say the other advice I would give, look, it's not a straight line, right? It's not, you know, the thing that I had to do along the way was I had to step out of my comfort zone. I did take a rotational assignment, so I was head of corporate IT for a long time at ADP, and then I volunteered for an operational role in a small but very fast-growing business, which obviously helped me, went back to the CIO, CTO type of role, and then to the COO role. So. Look for those opportunities. Go and seek out them. Your network is important. IT, the great thing about being CIO is you know everybody, right? It's an awesome perch to get to know the business leaders and find opportunities to collaborate with them in maybe different ways and redefine yourself that way and then get out there and do it. But I would argue that given the importance of data and information and technology in every business today, I actually think CIOs have some unique qualifications to move into, you know, other CXO roles for sure. And, you know, I know that over time you're going to see more people move from CIO into those types of positions.
And I think I'm hearing you say also the importance of gaining breadth of experience. I know you used to say, I mean, you had a long career at ADP, and rather than having the same job in multiple places, you used to say back in those days, I've had many jobs in one company. And that allowed you to have sort of a T career. You had depth in IT, but you had breadth in a variety of areas and understood the business that much more profoundly as well.
Right.
And it seems like that's served you well in the path up as well, if I'm not mistaken.
That's totally correct, Peter. The reality is, you know, 26 years at ADP, it's a very unique thing these days, right? You don't see the long tenures anymore, but you're right. You know, that exact phrase, I had many different careers inside of the same company. And a lot of that was sheer will of networking and volunteering for different roles and being persistent in terms of, again, this thing about people say, well, you're an IT guy, you're not a P&L guy, you're not a general manager. It's like, hey, wait a minute. I went back, I got my MBA in finance, I tried to round myself out, and I kind of wedged my way into those things. And it was a great run. Like, I'm super thankful for ADP, and it's a wonderful company, and it prepared me well for the other opportunities. And it took courage after 26 years to go do something totally different. But I have to tell you, it was the most invigorating thing of my life, being able to learn a new industry, taking on a COO role, running sales and marketing and services, all things that I had some experience with, but then I got to synthesize it all together and actually run a business.
How much would you say is letting others know about your ambition? I mean, obviously, you were making it very clear in that conference, though there weren't a lot of colleagues of yours. I guess there were executive recruiters who might, although it doesn't sound like they were on board with necessarily facilitating the journey you were envisioning. Yeah. But how much of it was kind of articulating your ambition as you went along? And as you said, finding those opportunities, but also letting those with influence know that this was something you aspired to do.
Yeah, you know, naked ambition is a little bit of a turnoff, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, patience was always my, you know, sort of my mantra, which is, look, if I do good work and I prove myself, then good things will happen. And then when the opportunities present, so I didn't go running around saying I want to be general manager of this business or I want to be CEO one day. But when the general management job at ADP, for example, came about, I was in a rental car with the head of HR, and he said, hey, we're struggling to find somebody to run this business. Do you know anybody? And of course, I said, yeah, I might know somebody. I'm sitting right here. But it was opportunistic. So I think, you know, you got to live within yourself. You have to, modesty is a really important trait, right? Humility is a really important trait, and you need to have those things. You have to trust in yourself and then pick your opportunities to actually express, you know, your ambition.
I also wanted to ask you about back to Click. As you see the organization evolving and growing, you're currently owned by a private equity firm.
Right.
You know, how do you see sort of the next several years evolving based upon now these first 6-7 months that you've been in role? What are some of the ambitions you have for the organization as you look forward?
It's a great organization. I'm really excited. You know, we're in the right place at the right time. As I mentioned, nobody's turned down conversations in analytics. This concept of the data platform going end to end from raw data all the way through polished analytics out to the business, embedded analytics, leveraging sensors and IoT into a real-time platform to produce analytics, all super critical. You know, when I look out, you know, clearly cloud transformation is important, right? Analytics, just because of the complexity of it, it has been a little bit slower to move to a full cloud model. That's going to happen. It is happening. We're at the forefront of it. We're building on assets in the cloud, but it's different than a transactional system like a Workday or a NetSuite or something where, you know, transactions are easier to do in the cloud than BI because of all the diverse data sources and things. But that transformation is going to happen. So when you think about the ability to leverage sort of infinite scale you get with cloud infrastructure, capacity on demand, the power of the analytics platform that we have, you start to be able to solve really, really interesting problems. And you start to be able to lead with data versus lead with gut.
Mike, I wonder if you could take a moment to talk about how well-prepared organizations are to embrace analytics in their day-to-day operations.
It's a great question, Peter. I would say not prepared enough. You know, this concept of data literacy, which is the ability to read, interpret, argue with data, is something that it hasn't quite taken hold yet. And, you know, surveys that we've done show that Even C-level executives, only 1 in 4 consider themselves data literate, comfortable with this concept of reading and arguing with data. I would argue that the ability to do that, the ability to interpret data, to be data literate, is going to be as important to tomorrow's world as reading and writing were to the Industrial Revolution. So you have to get ready. You have to get your organization ready. You have to get people comfortable with this concept. And the last wave of BI tools, you know, traditional BI only reaches about 1 in 5 employees anyway, right? So this combination of new ever-evolving technology along with bringing your organization along to be data literate is going to be critical. And, you know, we view it as so important that we have an entire data literacy program that's completely independent from our product. So we offer it free to anybody. You know, they don't have to be a Qlik customer because we feel like it's changing the world. And, you know, Qlik has this deep social responsibility mantra. We do a lot. We give a lot of our software away to charities and not-for-profits in kind, solve really pithy problems. Like the UN is a great example of that. We want the world to be more data literate. We want data not only to drive business, but actually to drive change in the entire world.
For those who'd be curious, where can they find the data literacy tools you're talking about?
If you go to Qlik.com and look for data literacy, you'll find it all out there.
Well, Mike Capone, thank you so much for spending time with us on the Forum on World Class IT, and congratulations again on your phenomenal career journey.
Thanks, Peter. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week. My guest will be Bill Murphy, the Chief Technology Officer of Blackstone.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the 3 prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The 5th and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the 4th principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these 5 principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.